Matt Gomez. Welcome back to the Honeycomb Hideout. I'm your host, your Scentmaster Thirst King, Joe Kane. And with me as always is my co-pilot, co-conspirator, collaborator, Christine Kitchens.
I'm here. We did it, Joe. We showed up. We're so proud of us for actually showing up.
Be very proud of us. Be very, very proud of us. But also, welcome to 2024. This is the first episode of the new year. And we warned y'all we were going on hiatus, so you can't be mad because there haven't been any new episodes lately. But here we are. We are back in 2024. Is not much different from 2023. I'm not gonna lie. There's not a great air of change this year. But hey, we still got 10 more months to see what happens.
I like how you said that with the same energy of like, don't worry, guys. There's 10 months left this year.
Yeah. Because until things turn around in the right way, that's the mood. Like, yes, I proudly wear my Ouroboros Loki shirt anytime the mood strikes me. And his catchphrase is, well, according to new rock stars, his catchphrase is, "We're all gonna die." And I'm like, no,
that's a vibe, yo.
No, that is the absolute vibe of 2024.
So, yes, here comes. Yes. Our souls are eroding. 2024 already feels so fucking long.
Yep.
But something wonderful did arrive mid-January.
Oh, yeah. Something that incited the, what's it called? The ADHD obsessive.
Hyperfixation.
Hyperfixation.
Yeah,
that's the term.
That's correct. Yeah. deep dive into AO3. Yeah, it's good. I have about 10 tabs open on my phone right now. Yes, no, we are talking about the premiere and conclusion of the first season of Has-Been Hotel, which is on Amazon Prime. And this is a little bit of preamble to what the full show is going to be out about. But first, I'm going to gush about this show. Because fucking awesome. So, like, I love irreverent adult animation. Like, you know, Netflix made that tag and it feels like it was for me. It's like, you know, thinking in the vein of stuff like Futurama, Big Mouth, Simpsons, going back a little bit more, those kinds of shows where it's animated style, but there is, this was not made for children.
No.
And Has-Been Hotel is the work of, I'm definitely going to fucking fuck this up. Hold on. Let me consult real quick.
Oh, yeah.
So I can try to get this correct. Because there's, the creator has, like, a handle.
Yeah.
Creator of,
I think it's Vizzy Pop, but I don't think, I don't think that's their,
yes, you're correct. Yeah. Actual name is Vivian Medrano and Vivzy Pop. Vivzy Pop?
Vivzy Pop.
Anyway,
funky.
So this is an interesting person because their main platform is YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been doing their own animation and story stuff for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And the same way you might wait for a webcomic for like a single page to come out once every 2 months. Vivzy Pop. We're going to do this about 12 times before this is done.
Easily.
Has a similar thing going for her creations. I believe it's she, her. But she actually has the show called Hell of a Boss that's been around for a while and I believe exclusively exists on her YouTube channel.
Correct.
And this is an animation that is super 18 up. Like, you are hearing, like, high demons talking about how they like to get their bussy pounded in the dead of night and first thing in the morning. Like, that's the kind of, like, manic energy that's in the show.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also bringing in a lot of these classic creatures we think of when we think of hell. Mm. Hellhounds, imps, high demons, that sort of thing.
Okay, okay.
And Hell of a Boss, I think, got kind of a cult following.
Oh, but, yes.
Yeah. And I think, you know, they got the merch. They got the pop figurines, I think.
They've got the tumblers.
They got the tumblers.
Yep.
And Hazbin Hotel is something that actually spun out of a different creation. I think it was a webcomic that she does called something.
Mm.
Called something.
Yeah.
The webcomic was called...
It definitely started...
Zoophobia.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Yeah. So Hazbin Hotel was a spinoff from Zoophobia, because originally there was supposed to be this sequence that was taking place in hell.
Mm-hmm.
And she realized, looking at all these characters, she's like, you know, these guys are pretty cool. They might be cool enough to actually have their own shit.
Mm.
And so I believe the planned arc in Zoophobia got axed, and instead we got the pilot for Hazbin Hotel.
Mm, okay.
Which, holy fuck, I think came out like two years ago, 4 years ago?
4 years ago.
4 years ago. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I caught this pilot when it was released 4 years ago, and I immediately fell in love. But I just assumed that that's as far it was ever going to fucking go. And I let it slip off of my brain, because that's what you have to do with shit you find on the internet sometimes. You just got to forget about it for a couple years and then come back and check on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was tremendously pleased towards the end of last year.
Mm-hmm.
When I heard that Amazon Prime had picked up Hazbin Hotel.
Mm.
And I was ready for it. And I believe it released something like mid-January. And they were dropping two episodes every Thursday. Mm-hmm. And the first season has just completed. It's 8 episodes in total. And holy fuck. It's adult animation. It's irreverent adult animation. Mm-hmm. And there's fucking songs in there. Like, I don't know what primitive childlike wonder this thing taps into when they're like, here are some really intense, like, demon railing and cursing and, like, doing drugs, but also here's this Disney song to go with it, and you're like, you know what? I'm entranced.
I'd like to think of Hazbin Hotel as a emo theater kid in college's wet dream.
It's true. Honestly, that's legit.
Yeah.
The forgotten Disney princess, Charlie Morningstar. Yeah. So I was obsessed pretty much immediately because this was hitting all my buttons.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody should go watch it, first of all. I made Joe go watch it.
Yes, she did.
My partners have probably seen the series like 3 times now just by merit of being in the same room as me.
I'm surprised only 3.
Yeah, well, you know, they've learned to walk away after a while.
It's important to know when to walk away.
The hyperfixation phases are great for me, but can be kind of intense for the people living with me.
No, really?
Yeah, it's like you should just mention the movie Sing 2 when Jay is around and see how they respond. But all that aside, it's a great show. Everybody should go catch that shit. Go watch the pilot on the YouTube channel. Go look at some of the prequel comics that are floating around out there.
That original animation has like 50 million views.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good. Mm-hmm. But I love the show, and I fucking love some of these characters, because this is kind of a minor spoiler alert, but, you know, spoiler alert nonetheless, that one of the, like, main cast characters is Lucifer Morningstar, Fallen Angel.
I mean, it's hell. He has to be involved
somehow.
That's
right. You're right. King of hell. Yeah. And I love this guy so goddamn much. Like, you should see the simping for this man on the internet.
Not going to lie, Lucifer is kind of one of my favorite characters of the show.
Everything I've ever seen is like, we love our short king. It's so good. And Lucifer Morningstar is like this very strange, quirky character in the Hazbin Hotel universe. Where he's the king of hell. He has insane magical abilities. Like, he can open up pocket dimensions. Mm-hmm. He has all 6 of his seraphim wings in this particular iteration.
Oh, yeah.
He can transform into fucking anything, and he will pound your face into pavement, like, zero issues. But then it's like, when we're really first introduced to them, the very first thing we see is this guy alone in his workshop, surrounded by a million million rubber ducks, and he's so excited about his brand new rubber duck that spits fire. And so you are introduced to this guy who is depressed, who has this weird love of rubber ducks, but is also very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of sitting and looking at this character, and I felt like this is such a neat presentation
mm-hmm.
of the character of Lucifer Morningstar.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are a lot of shows and books and things out there that will present, you know, Lucifer as everything from, like, that very stereotypical horned red devil.
Yeah, yeah.
To, you know, somebody who's actually was the good guy all along, you know, mm-hmm. a la the television show Lucifer.
Yeah.
And here was I love this character presentation because mm-hmm. he's almost immediately presented as like this depressed guy in a funk mm-hmm. who is kind of goofy, but also is really fucking powerful mm-hmm. and is like ultimately like very proud of his daughter and wants to protect her. And so like, this was like a very, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, empathetic character. Somebody that you can empathize with and be like, yeah, I kind of see myself mm-hmm. in this dude.
Oh, yeah. And no, absolutely.
That got me thinking, though, is that I love the show, but it is not the first to take the setting of hell
mm-hmm.
as it's portrayed, you know, a la Dante's Inferno, you know, mm-hmm. with these multiple rings of hell and, you know, we're tormenting sinners and things mm-hmm. like that. And playing around with the idea of it, or playing around with the idea of biblical themes in general
mm-hmm.
in a very fun, derivative, fan fiction kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of wanted to talk about that.
Oh, yeah.
Is, you know, zooming out from Hazbin Hotel, mm-hmm. which everybody should fucking watch, I wanted to talk a little bit today about what, in my head, I have dubbed biblical fan fiction. Mm. So, again, we're thinking about Hazbin Hotel. We're thinking about the television show Lucifer.
Yeah.
I mean, if you really want to get to it, fucking Life of Brian, like that kind of shit. Like, what is it that people see these very, I'm trying to use the right words here, like, holy thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and they want to take it and they want to play with it and turn it into something more human, not divine so much as human, and, you know, something you can relate to. I don't know if it's just because of me being an American audience member, but I feel like I don't see that same level of play with a lot of the other major religions out there. Like, thinking about, you know, Jewish faith and the Joe, help me out. Why am I blanking here?
Let's see. You mentioned Christianity, Judaism.
Bible is to Christian as blank is to Jewish. Judaism, Jesus.
Yes.
Sorry, guys. I'm gonna fumble a little bit here, and I'm gonna ask your grace here.
Trying to think, what's the holy book of Judaism?
The Torah? No, that's not right. That's the dance. No. It's very different. Okay, oh, my God. Wow. I did not have enough caffeine for this, it turns out.
Nope. So we are going to the internet to figure this out. Now, if it's the Torah, I'm going to be pissed. But at the same time, rather be sure than not. Not much of a signal in here. Right. Come on. It was the Torah.
I'm not full of shit. All right. But yeah, which I guess mm-hmm. objectively is basically the same book. Mm. But, you know,
but there's a lot of similarities between Judaism and Christianity, they're cut from similar cloths.
But yeah, so mm-hmm. like, you know, Joe, do mm-hmm. me a favor. List off, because you are the ultimate consumer of media. List off some movies, shows,
mm.
fiction offhand that take biblical characters and reimagine them, either personality-wise or in a modern world, anything like that.
Okay. Well, honestly, the biggest examples are, of course, Lucifer. Let's see. Legion is one that actually it's surprisingly really, really decent. Legion as in it's actually a film about an angel that falls to protect people from other angels. Really interesting story based off of was it a manga or just an independent comic? Not sure. Anyway, Dogma.
Dogma.
Yes. The movie that taught me that I didn't have to be a Christian to be a good person. That's a story. That's all I'm going to say. That's a story. Well, I'll tell it eventually. But basically so there's that. In a unique twist, panty and stocking with garter belt, a really ridiculously raunchy, crude anime about angels trying to earn their way back into heaven by killing demons and, you know, undead evils and shit. But yes, this is an 18-plus podcast, but there is fucked up shit going on in that anime. That's all I'm going to get into. But yeah, like the funny thing is, mentioning it from a theological standpoint, like the, you know, standard heaven hell binary, like a lot of times those are usually very prominent in like very big gray stories. The ones with Sandman. I almost missed Sandman. But yeah, no, it's Sandman, like one of the best ones. But in terms of, it's only in like recent years where you really started to see the black and white of it start to blur a bit, where people started to kind of turn its axis, not fully in the other direction. Some people did. Some creators have fully switched the binary, but more often than not, you'll see them play in the middle ground where it's like, yeah, hell is definitely not what you think it is, but neither is heaven. Which is a much more interesting story rather than hell's fucking great, fuck heaven, which is just like, that's the easy thing to do. That's what the other motherfuckers did. Come on, show us something about both of them, please. it's mostly been in like the lab, like from the 90s on, where you really start to see the nuances of like, you know, Lucifer Morningstar Lucifer actually spun out of Sandman. The TV show Lucifer you mentioned, that's actually a spinoff from Sandman.
Really?
Yeah, the comic was anyway. They kind of cut ties from the Sandman side of things because Fox wasn't trying to go that deep into it.
Joe, speaking of Neil Gaiman, you know what we totally fucking forgot in this conversation?
Oh, shit.
It was fucking Good Omens.
Oh
wow,
fuck.
That was a big missing one on us. Yeah. Holy shit.
Damn,
yeah.
Yes. No, Good Omens definitely has to be mentioned, which is another really great one because it's like, yeah, no, heaven and hell has assholes on both sides, which I definitely appreciate. And also, yeah, no, I basically ship the main characters.
It's hard not to. I'm pretty sure at this point even the creators ship the main characters.
Yeah.
I can't even describe the percentage of my Facebook feed that is like
Good Omens memes.
Aziraphale X Crowley.
Oh.
It's like starting to be inundated by the Hasbin Hotel shipping, but yeah. So I think you said something very interesting here.
Mm.
The idea of trying to enter that gray space.
Mm.
And presenting, you know, these two,
yep. Good and evil.
Yeah, good and evil, and these places beyond death.
Mm-hmm.
And showing that it's not really in a binary.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering again. Like I said, I in my head, I'm like, this is biblical fan fiction. Because it's absolutely what it is. Somebody wanted to do an AU.
But if you really think about it, all theology is fan fiction.
It is.
All theology is fan fiction until you get to the other side and you find out who, if anyone, was right.
So,
yes, I said it.
So I'm wondering, like, okay, so related to this conversation. So all, I'm quoting Joe here. Please rewind 15 seconds to get the full context. All theology is fan fiction. Okay, so this is actually even more interesting now that we're talking about this. Because if, again, kind of focusing in on Christian faith in particular, if the Bible was the OG fan fiction, and as far as I've understood, there have been tons and tons and tons of different translations of this Bible. And tons of iterations. So moving into the digital age, like we are now, where so much of everything exists online and via visual media and audiobooks and stuff like that, it kind of makes sense that as we're migrating away from those physical written texts, that there's still that human desire to reimagine their biblical fan fiction.
Oh, absolutely.
Via a medium that is more conducive to the ages. I mean, you still have stuff like VeggieTales, right?
Yeah. It's still there.
It's still there. But but it is interesting how even it's so timeless to play around with this idea of heaven and hell and morality specifically framed within a biblical context.
Oh yeah.
And so, Joe, do you feel like looking at stuff like Hazeman Hotel, looking at Lucifer, I keep reaching for those because they're just at the top of my brain list.
Also, Tom Ellis was a fantastic Lucifer Morningstar. Yeah, he really fucking was.
He really was. Do you feel like more modern iterations of that play around with these theological ideas are uniformly becoming more gray? Like, there's no longer so much that story of this place is good, this is this place is bad. Are we now getting to a place where kind of everybody is converging on this idea of it's not so black and white? Because it's what I guess I'm trying to get at here is there some kind of mirroring of broader societal interpretations of morality at play here? Are we as a society starting to understand the idea that it's not so black and white, that people end up in quote unquote bad places for all kinds of reasons? Because going to Hazeman Hotel in particular, you learn throughout the season that there are a lot of people who are down there for a lot of different reasons. And there are some weird things that can get you down there. And in fact, a major plot point of the show, spoiler alert, is they find out that the angels in heaven don't know what the fucking criteria are for people to show up. And
I have theories about that, by the way. We're going to get into it later.
We'll get into it later. But yeah, it's this idea of like, it feels like such a 20s thing to do. I suppose technically like, you know, a 1500s thing to do, to be very like hardlining that if you do this, you are going to hell. If you do this, you are going to heaven. But as we are in the midst of that information age where we see and hear more stories and understand and see a lot more different perspectives, you understand that there's a lot more to be viewed beyond the action itself. It's the context surrounding it. So, for example, you know, this is going to be kind of an extreme one, but I'm going to put it out there. If you have somebody who was a prostitute and, you know, she had a pimp and she's trying to get out and, you know, there's some sort of altercation that breaks out and she like fucking kills the pimp or goes to the cop or something like that. You know, it's there is so much happening there.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of people who might be like, you know what? That person is terrible and evil because they were doing this quote unquote evil thing.
Mm-hmm.
When in reality, there's a lot around it. And so what I'm wondering is the show Hazbin Hotel a sign of our changing view of morality through a religious lens?
Yeah. I mean, there's really no way of getting around it, especially because of the fact that it comes from someone of the generation where that mentality is at its most, what's the term? Most prolific. Like, because ultimately, we've often lived in eras of hard, fast rules. I mean, because the morality is very, very black and white. I mean, tossing some examples out there, like, you know, gay people, trans people, all these types of people have existed throughout history. There is literal proof that there have always been gay people. There have always been people that have experienced gender dysphoria or have always felt that they are not who they are meant to be in their own body. These sorts of things have always existed throughout history. They've only been truly acknowledged on a wider scale until the last 20, 30 years. I mean, even in the 60s and 70s, during, you know, like, you know, Stonewall and things like that, you knew they existed, but they were not acknowledged, if you get my meaning.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So now there is a time that we're reaching a point where you have to acknowledge them, because these people are the people of these backgrounds are refusing to be ignored. They are taking their inalienable right to be able to live and exist in the way of their choosing. And that's also letting loose a whole other cavalcade of questions, I like to call it. Because as soon as certain things start happening, other things start happening. It all dominoes into each other in different ways. Like, as cultures start to blend and be exposed to each other, you start having all these different mentalities, all these moralities start, you know, coming to the forefront, and people start asking questions. Like, God made us all in his image, then why would he have made all these other people? Why would he have allowed gay people to exist? Folks with gender dysphoria. Why do these people exist if God made humanity in their image? I also subscribe to God being gender neutral, but that's just me. but that's the thing. And as the questions pile up, no one in the past generation is really going to have satisfying answers. So a lot of the young creatives are going out there young people in general are going out there trying to find their own answers. And some people find it in other faiths and religions. Other people find it within their own mythologies. Some people reinterpret the mythologies and theologies that already are there. Because some people find their truth in the buried past. And it's kind of awesome seeing some of that happen. But it also starts bringing up a lot of contradictions in what has already been written. Like the fact that, like, if you really look at it, like, I love that you brought up Lucifer and Morningstar, because I think there's a lot going on with that character that a lot of people have gotten onto, but not in a way that they realize. Because here's the thing. Lucifer is technically, like, in his interpretation in Hazbin Hotel, is the first dreamer to be denied by their parent. The one that wanted to, the one that wanted to go to Hollywood and pursue their dream, and God said no. Because then your brothers and sisters are going to want to do that shit too. Now, the thing of it is, we still don't know really what it was that got God, or if I remember correctly, was Lucifer already kicked out of heaven by the time, I'm trying to remember, before Hasbin Hotel, was Lucifer and Lilith already kicked out of heaven, out of the garden by the time, damn it, I am really mixing up my shit here. Okay. Was Lucifer already kicked out of heaven by the time he met Lilith?
No. Okay. No. Okay. The order of events in the universe of Hasbin Hotel were that Lucifer was like, yo, what if we put crazy ducks everywhere?
Mm-hmm.
And all the other angels and seraphim are like, bro, no. And like, put him in the corner.
Okay.
And they started created Adam and Eve.
Okay.
And then, no, sorry. Let me actually walk that back. Created Adam and Lilith.
Adam and Lilith, yes.
And then Lilith was like, I'm not really looking to be subjugated, yo. Mm-hmm. And left the garden. And Lucifer was like, bruh. And they had like, they took their Bonnie and Clyde energy.
Mm-hmm.
And they went and they approached Eve and they were like, yo, you want to get wild with us? And Eve was like, fuck yeah. And after that, that was the point when evil entered the world with free will,
mm-hmm.
and when the angels cast both Lucifer and Lilith into hell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. So that was when they were cast, which is interesting because if I remember the original lore, Lucifer was already a fallen angel and in hell by the time Adam and Lilith came about. So that is an interesting twist on the lore. But I can definitely see, considering what they chose to, Vivian chose to do with the lore of Hasbin Hotel, completely works for where she's going. I mean, fact of the matter is, you see in anime that they use Buddhist mythology in its own ways a lot of times too. So, but anyway, going back to what I was saying. Lucifer is fascinating because of the fact that he's the dreamer that he's the cautionary tale of the dreamer that dreamed too big is basically where they went with Lucifer. So you got that. And then you have the, I went off my own. I jumped off my own train. So you have that. And that is a whole different context from most versions of Lucifer. Like, even in terms of, Sandman, they play up the evilish side of things. But this is the first version of Lucifer Morningstar that I've seen. It's like, he's not evil. He's literally just depressed and surrounded by the absolute worst of humanity.
You fucking know this version of Lucifer, what he deadass reminded me of.
What that?
Okay, The Greatest Show came out,
you mean The Greatest Showman?
Greatest Showman, there we go, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Came out, P.T. Barnum, yeah.
Yeah.
It was, to me, it was that portrayal of P.T. Barnum if he was also a seraphim. Because,
Okay.
Here's my pitch.
I actually have not seen the movie, so.
Okay, so this is only going to work so well. Joe, we got to watch this. It's a musical, so you're going to have to tolerate that. But I love it.
Hey, I do not hate musicals. I do not hate musicals, but it needs to be a good one with a good story.
Mm-hmm. But so a little bit of context on that particular movie is P.T. Barnum in this movie was somebody who grew up very poor and was a dreamer. Mm-hmm. Like, he had these fantastic visions and of the kind of show that he wanted to portray, And he did come up with a fucking kick-ass show, but he got carried away.
Mm.
And in his pursuit of this bigger, better show, he ended up putting his loved ones at financial peril, kind of neglecting them because all he could see was the magic and wonder and the show must go on.
Uh-huh.
And to me, Lucifer Morningstar and Hasbin Hotel was the same fucking way.
Mm, okay.
Like, there was, like, even the specific circus iconography. Mm. Like, they were clearly painting this guy as a ringmaster who wanted to put on this wild show.
Yeah, and a lot of fashion choices definitely pointed ringmaster.
Yeah, and apparently that's a theme that's consistent in some of the other works of Dizzy Pop.
Okay.
This is about to be the Wario situation all over again. And that was really interesting, mm-hmm. too, because in and of that, it feels like it took away, it was less of a question about good and evil, more of like, you know, somebody wanted to go off to Hollywood and mm-hmm. do this crazy drama. Uh-huh. I mean, we've all got our dramatic friends who are out going out there and doing crazy shit. And we're like, okay, you're being a little dramatic, but you know, okay.
Mm-hmm.
But imagine if you had that and then you also had the ability to like create the universe. Mm.
Yeah.
Like nobody likes to have their vision suppressed.
No. Nope.
And but I actually like, okay, I'm actually going to bring back another point that you kind of glazed over.
Uh-oh, okay.
But that was kind of buzzing around in the back of my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned in passing that you'd had seen something similar with anime and Buddhist iconography and religion. And so this can be a follow-up question. Because I know I keep throwing around like biblical fan fiction as the term of the day.
Oh, yeah.
But is this something that we're experiencing universally in terms of different religions? Because, I mean, we both watch fucking anime. So, like, I think we could hands down say that there is a mirroring of this phenomenon in Shinto.
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
The number of animes out there that are just, like, flipping, you know, some of these classical, you know, figures in Shinto and other faiths that are kind of more prevalent over in the East.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, that for sure. But it's, like, do we see that extending? Because Japan just gets fucking weird no matter what. Like, you can say, oh, yeah, Japan does this too. But Japan is also like, welcome to our convenience store / porn store / candy store. You know, like, they're just.
And they always have great selection of all three.
They always do. But do we, so like, that almost doesn't count because they're always, they've always been balls to the walls. They're always going to be balls to the walls. But it feels like that shift in media and the Christian faith has been relatively recent. Like, you know, in the past 3 decades, something like that, I would say.
I personally would actually say 4. I would say this has definitely been on the rise since at least the 80s. Like the 70s had like, you know, certain psychedelic aspects within, I always attribute it back to comics, but comics was kind of the primary medium where a lot of ideas, you know, comics, novels, what have you, literature, that was where the really far out shit was really happening, but it didn't always get the main kind of traction. But then in the 80s, once the import of other nations' materials, that's when, you know, like when different animes started really making a splash over here. That's when the imports of other comics from other countries, yada yada. That's, I'd say, the 80s on up is definitely when that paradigm shift started happening. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the really deep, like the really deep thinkers started coming up.
Well, not only that, but that's also coincident with a lot of civil rights movements, too, is kind of really interesting to think about. Mm-hmm. See, now, this is where we're going to have to work really hard because now I'm like, whoa.
Because
now I'm thinking about, you know, what were at the time where we started to see this uptick in media that reimagines heaven and hell and morality in a Christian universe. Now I am sitting here and asking the question of like, what are some of the other things that were happening around the time? But you make an interesting point that, you know, we were starting to reach towards globalism. I think at this point, we're starting to get other things from other people. We're starting to get more perspectives, which I would argue lends credence to my argument that as we are moving more towards the digital age and era that, you know, stuff like Hasbin Hotel, stuff like Good Omens.
Mm-hmm.
That show's so much. Oh my God, when they had them kiss at the end of season two, I almost flipped my fucking couch out of sheer excitement. But, you know, we start to see those very dramatic, arguably more liberal reimaginings of mm-hmm. who's good, who's evil. Mm-hmm. Is anybody strictly good, strictly evil? That mm-hmm. kind of question. And, I mean, especially you, like, if you think about season two of Good Omens, which I think was something that was created kind of the same way that they started to do the later seasons of Handmaid's Tale, where there was the original content of the book, was season one of Good Omens. Mm-hmm. And then season two on was like totally recently made up shit.
Like
the rest of our biblical fan fiction. But, you know, even in that season, you saw parallels of people being drawn into relationships with people who are quote unquote from the other side of the table.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those were romantic, which yay. Mm. But, you know, also some of those that are more platonic of like interactions between individual angels and demons and, you know, seeing that where you're coming from doesn't necessarily preclude your ability to form a relationship with somebody from the other side.
Yeah.
And
that, actually, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. And that was fairly recent. And so again, to me, there are things that are happening at the same time where in society, we are becoming more globalized. Mm-hmm. We're seeing more stuff. We're reading more stuff. We're getting more perspectives. We're learning that things are not black and white, which is something that it feels like was very deeply ingrained into people, even a couple generations ago, was like, this is the way this is. This is the way that is.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if you're a sex worker, you're a bad person. And if you go to church, you're a good person. You know, like that kind of stuff, which we know is absolutely incorrect. And I think when we see things like Me Too, when we see, you know, sex workers who are advocating for themselves and telling their stories, you're starting to have, like you said, you're having those reimaginings in your mind of, you know,
those paradigm shifts of perspective.
Perspective. And, you know, maybe it makes sense that when people and creators, like you were mentioning, they play around this idea, it makes sense that they do it through the lens of religion, because this, for so many people, is where their personal morality stems from. Is, you know, what does the Bible say is a good and a bad person? What does the Quran say is a good and a bad person? The Torah. What are the Shinto texts? I don't know. Buddhist texts. You know, what, you know, because for so many people, this is where their morality is derived from. So when we're starting to have these questions around this, maybe it ultimately makes sense that creators can't help but turn to this theater and these puppets to try and play out these questions that they're having.
And the funny thing that you mentioned that, and I think a lot of that really does stem from theater, from the interpretation of these various ideas, because we come from the Disney generation, let us be honest. And ultimately, how many of our generation, well, technically mine, then yours. Christine's younger than me, y'all, and every now and again I remember and it frustrates the
hell
out of
me. I just need you to forget about that. That's all I need to do is just forget about that, Joe.
But yes, but the Disney generation really gravitated towards the villains, if you remember. You know, like the Ursula, Scar, hell, Jafar. And like, and there are so many like villains that became like these cornerstones for so many different types of people. And you just start to wonder, okay, why are the villains being so like, you know, deified, if you want to call it something? Like, why is the hero worship for the villains? But then you start to realize, because the villains are reflecting a lot of the traits and aspects of the audience that the audience is not seeing represented in their heroes. So that's where a lot of that is coming from. And I think that's where a lot of the inversion, the graying of morality is coming from as well. because a lot of people are starting to see that these things that are being considered, you know, sinful and evil are certain aspects of them, like, you know, eating meat and fucking on a Tuesday, what have you. The things that the Bible considered sinful, certain of them are just like, these actually aren't hurting anyone. But then you have the other, then you have other ones where there is still definitely a line between what can be considered good and evil. I will stand by that. Because it all boils down to harm. It all boils down to harm beyond oneself. Now, harm of thyself, that's something else entirely. We're not talking about that today. But I think it all comes down to people started to realize the things that were being vilified were things that were not really harming anyone, at least not in the modern context. There's an old Chris Rock joke that honestly really kind of set the wheels in motion for me way back in the day. It's like, back in the day, pork could kill you. Because of the fact that folks back then didn't have the right means to store it. You know, they didn't know all the best ways to cook it, prepare it, all that jazz. So certain, you know, pork, certain products were bad for you. So a lot of these, you know, leaders would use certain texts to say, this is a sinful product, you should not touch this. But time changes. We evolve. We develop technologies. Now, in the words of Chris Rock, pork chop's your fucking friend. I'd say all that to say this. Time evolves and people evolve with it. But the fact of the matter is, these things were set in place the way they were for a reason. And usually it was for a perceived greater good. And that might have been the case at that time. But time moves and it stays still for no one. And as time moves, people change along with it. So, because of all these steadfast rules that are still trying to be adhered to, people are starting to push back on them because the harm that they used to cause is no longer the case. And now the harm that people are trying to prevent is now actually causing harm. And they don't understand that because they still have the perspective of, but this was a good thing back then. They lack the perspective to realize then is not now. And that's where a lot of this is coming from. The younger generation is realizing there isn't a great deal of the same kind of harm in this that there was back then. And now they're allowing themselves the freedom to experience and interpret and change their perspectives on things. Hence the hero worship of villains. Hence the questioning of specific moral, you know, cornerstones of society. Now, as I said, I do hold the narrative there is such a thing as good, you know, as solid goods and solid evils. But I think those are narrower than we realize. They are not as massive as they used to be. There are ways of interpreting things, and we need to be willing to ask those questions. We're not always going to like the answer, but we need to be prepared for that as well. And I think that's where a lot of young people are, where how a lot of young people like developed, where they realize that I know this is a sin, but this feels right. And that's where their morality evolved. And I think that's the big thing. And I think that's the big thing of it. I think that's where stuff like this comes from. Like Devil May Cry Baby.
I'm a Devil May Cry baby.
Well, not just Devil May Cry, but also Devil
See,
Man.
We're not so
Cry
different, baby. Joe.
but also the Devil Man Cry Baby anime on Netflix. Did you ever see that one, right?
I have not seen that one.
Okay. It's intense. It's brutal. I saw it one time. Never going to watch it again. But it has some very, very interesting shit to say along these same lines. Because the hero is literally possessed of devil powers. But he's also fighting against heaven. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of stuff going on there that also fits in with this. But, like, effectively... There was a question that always used to plague me early on when I was like really starting to push as a writer. Can you use evil means to do true good? And that very question is the kind of thing that no one would even attempt to ask in years past. But it's a question that honestly, I can't help but ask these days, because I mean, look at all the changes in fiction that we've been seeing, all these relatable villains and things like that, which I kind of think we're overdoing it now, because let us be fair, there are evil motherfuckers out there, and that is not necessarily unrealistic.
You know, it's funny that you said that. I don't know if you also said this before, but I think it was you who said this. But reasons that I fucking liked Lucifer and Hazmat Hotel is that, you know, he's still relatable, but he's not like, I don't think he fully falls into that trap that you're talking about of like, bad guys being a little bit too good. Like Lucifer in the television series, Lucifer, like that guy was hot, but like he got to a point where like, even though he was supposed to be the bad guy, you know, he was doing good things. And even eventually, I think I didn't finish watching that series, but if I'm remembering what I read on the internet correctly, you know, it even got to a point where there was an inversion of roles still where rather than doing that whole, God, I really need to be careful here because we're going to go down a way different rabbit hole. Even when he started to exhibit what we portray as good behavior, then that's when they started saying, oh, you're an angel again. Oh, you're going to heaven again. There wasn't this whole, like, you can be a good person and still be, you know, you know, hellish in origin. But oh my God, that is going down. You know what? Yes. I'm gonna stop myself. I'm gonna get this back under control because now we are starting to get to very riveting for me. But we are starting to get into like midnight gospel territory in terms of like, let's pop a couple tabs of acid and talk morality and religion.
No, we do not have that kind of time.
No, I think they're gonna kick us out very soon. But you know what? I'm gonna bring it back with some science.
Let's do it. And there was actually one other thing that I do want to bring up before we dive into the science.
Okay.
And that was the fact that, another spoiler for a Hazmat Hotel, the fact that the angels don't know what it takes to get into heaven. I have a theory about that. My theory is angels themselves are simply born of heaven. Thus, they do not know what it takes for a mortal to get there. They are incapable, but thus they are incapable of getting to heaven unless they themselves die. They are just born of it. They are not judged. It's kind of the same thing as Charlie. Charlie was born in hell, but she was never judged and sent to hell. So in a way, they inherently bypass the very rules of the place that they're upholding. So they're, in a way, the ultimate privileged.
Yes, I agree with that.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's why no angel knows what it takes to get into heaven, because no angel has ever had to actually earn their way into heaven.
That's just a show theory. Crossover.
Oh, man.
All right. Hazmat Hotel. Yes. So in honor of Alistair the Radio Demon.
Oh, damn.
I have gotten some radio facts. Which if our friend Jeff ever listens to the show, I really hope these are in fact correct. Because if they're not, homie is going to let me know about that. Yep. So fingers crossed, everybody.
Oh, yeah. Jeff is definitely going to make sure to say something if it's
That's right. You don't need to know. You don't need to know what the science when it was. did you know that radio waves were theorized before they were discovered?
Mm.
The scientific community knew about radio waves before anyone discovered actual evidence of them. In 1865, Scottish mathematician and physicist John Clerk Maxwell predicted the existence of radio waves in a paper titled A Dynamical Theory of the Electromagnetic Field, based on a presentation he gave before the Royal Society in December 1864. He also did some other papers, But yeah, he like talked about like, hey, I think this thing is probably a thing, which is actually quite common.
Hmm.
I think in the physics universe where there's a whole lot of like, probably this exists, but we're not sure.
I mean, theories exist for a reason.
That's true. That's true. Which is like so interesting because like there's so much overlap between physicists and theological individuals of like, probably this is a thing, but we're not actually sure.
Yep. It's all faith based.
It is all faith. Is oh, whoa. Let's see. The first radio commercial was for a real estate developer in New York City.
Okay.
Also, radio is actually an extremely important tool for astronomers. Because radio waves are part of the electromagnetic spectrum, one of the fundamental forces of nature, stars, quasars, planets, galaxies, and dust galaxies, because I don't know what the fuck that is, but I'm intrigued. But they admit them. Some of the earliest attempts to use radio to investigate the stars came at the turn of the 20th century, when astronomers attempted to pick up radio emissions emanating from our sun.
Oh.
Today, radio astronomy is an entire field of dedicated scientists pointing massive radio arrays at the stars in an effort to glimpse things unseen by the naked eye. One of the most impressive radio telescopes in the U.S. is the National Radio Astronomy Observatory, Robert C. Byrd Greenbank, Jesus fucking Christ, that was a mouthful, telescope located in West Virginia. The telescope is the largest fully steerable radio telescope in the world, and the machine is so sensitive to radio waves that Wi-Fi is illegal in the 13,000-square-mile national radio quiet zone surrounding the telescope.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So,
that's hardcore.
So, you know, if you tune your radio, it feels like such a, it's like weird radio, right? Like, yeah. You might pick up some shit coming from the sun.
What if the sun has a podcast?
What would the sun's podcast be about?
Okay, now that's some real midnight gospel
that
shit.
Is
right
the, that is the midnight gospel shit. Time to go home and watch midnight gospel. But yeah, that was a little bit more history than science-y, but you know, fuck it. It still counts.
It's historical science.
It is historical science. Boom. Yeah, yes. And don't be trying to turn on your Wi-Fi and hotspot in this area in West Virginia, because they will ping your ass.
Yeah. I don't want to know what that fine would be. That feels like that'd be like a four-digit fine, and I'm just like, damn, yo. They take their shit seriously.
Like just trying to get my Google Maps up, yo. I've been just lost.
I'm trying to leave, motherfucker. I'm trying to leave.
Yeah, so that was some radio science. Maybe next time we meet, I'll come up with some more actual science-y radio science. That could be Radio Science Minute Part 2.
Hey,
next
I'm down for it. Always down to hear about the radio.
Yeah, so that was inspired by Alistair,
the radio demon.
Who I had a friend who literally used the term for him to say that he scare rouses her.
Well, which is especially funny because apparently he's canonically asexual.
Yeah. No. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So I'm not going to get too much on a tangent because I could talk about how fucking cool the show is probably for a while. But yes, Alistair the Radio Demon is canonically arrow ace.
Yes.
So, which, you know, makes some of the stuff that happens in AO3 a little uncomfortable, but, you know, we always keep it weird. We keep it weird there.
Yeah. Unfortunately, fan fiction doesn't give a fuck about what the characters think. They are fiction.
Much bigger implications for our quote-unquote biblical fan fiction.
Right.
But we're going to pocket that. But yeah, so I feel like we need to get drunk and talk about this more, Joe, but
it's been a while since we've had a drunk cast.
It is. But we are definitely at time, I think, at this point. And, you know, I appreciate you letting me Poor Joe. Joe, literally, we sat down and was like, Joe's like, okay, you know, I know you said this was your idea, so how do you want this to go? And I'm like, just start talking. So there was no roadmap here, my friends. This is pure stream of consciousness. But I feel like I've been on a journey, and I have some more food for thought. Mm-hmm. And I now know some things about radio law in West Virginia. So I'm gonna call it productive. I'm gonna close the book on this one for the time being.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I definitely foresee this as something we could easily bring back for its own part two, because there's a lot to be discussed there. Because, I mean, ultimately, the theology is basically just mythology that folks put a lot of stock in. I mean, that's really the bulk of it. So there's a lot you can really talk about, because at some point, people worshipped the pantheons of Greek, Roman, Norse mythology as well. Now they're just considered myths. Who's to say Jesus doesn't just become the next gotcha character for a far, far future mobile app game? Guarantee he'd be a cleric.
He would be a cleric.
Yeah. Easily a healer. But anyway, but yeah, no, honestly, this is a really fun one to do. It was grinding through all of the material was especially interesting, but honestly, this was a really good one. I think this is definitely be worth revisiting soon. So on that note, that was Christine Kitchens, the Scientist Supreme.
Bringing a new stream of consciousness to you whenever you need it.
Full blast straight to the dome.
No filter.
Not a one. And I was your Scentmaster Thirst King, Joe Kane. Now get the fuck out.